Legendary Winchester AA shot shells are used throughout the world by millions of shooters. One specific AA target load that has everyone talking is the AA Diamond Grade. The Diamond Grade Elite target load has 8% antimony shot. It's the hardest shot available for crushing clays, and it's copper plated. Winchester AA, it's the choice of champions.
You are now tuned into Shotgun Sports USA. Powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S. and streaming all over the world. We talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you are into clay target sports, you are at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
My guests on the show today are Robert Crow and Josh Taylor with White Flyer Targets. We're going to discuss how White Flyer started, how they are made and distributed around the world, their commitment to quality, how they became the largest manufacturer of clay targets, and much more, right now on Shotgun Sports USA. Got Robert Crow and Josh Taylor on from White Flyer Targets. How you guys doing?
Good. How you doing, Justin?
Good.
Doing good, Justin.
Good. You know, on a funny note, I was thinking, I have been doing these podcasts for 3 or 4 years, and I have not talked about one thing. I think I've talked about everything other than this, and that's the target. You know, and that's what everyone shoots at, the clay target. I have no idea why I have not thought about doing that, but I'm glad we're doing it now.
We're glad to be here to answer any questions you have.
So before we get started, Robert, tell everyone what you do at White Flyer.
I'm the National Sales Director, and I also cover the Northeast sales region.
Okay, and Josh, I know you're over some region too, right? I think you're over my region.
I am. I'm the Midwest Southeast Sales Manager for White Flyer.
Yeah. What's involved with this, I guess, Robert? What's involved with your job?
Well, there's 4 sales managers across the country, and all of our sales go through a distribution network. We have a great group of distributors nationwide that service the gun clubs and several other dealers, retailers that are out there. So we oversee those distributors and make sure that we're servicing them to fulfill all of their needs. And we're also out there from a marketing standpoint, and attending events, listening to the customers, and taking that information back to the plants so that we can continue to strive forward with new products.
Yeah. Josh, I'm assuming you've got a similar job being one of the sales managers. You take care of your
territory.
Yeah,
I mean, like Robert said, you know, we're out there at the, you know, the things internally supporting our distributors and then getting out to the events, visiting with the customers, being at the major shoots, sponsoring them, being there to support them, be sure they get what they need when they need it. Of course, a lot of our planning happens when we show up to the event. You know, a lot of our job's already done. You know, we're there just to be sure everything runs smoothly and help any way we can, but all of our work for that event's been done months in advance. So yeah.
You know, the target industry's been around for a long time. It's neat to think back, and I think it's the late 1800s when people were doing this. They were shooting at glass balls and I guess whatever they bird live birds, but today we shoot at clay targets, and a lot of research is involved in those clay targets. Josh, start back when, I know you wasn't around back then, but I know you know the history from then all the way till now of how this clay target, so to speak, has evolved.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it started actually before the clay target with glass balls.
Right.
That was what people shot in competitions. A lot of them were used in the very popular in the Buffalo Bill Cody and his Wild West shows. They threw them up. They had them stuffed with feathers. They had them stuffed with sawdust to where when you shot the glass balls, you'd have that explosion and the people in the crowds could see the glass balls being shot. And then from there, they moved over and actually made some of the first early throwers where, and some of them actually look like the, everybody has that, the tennis ball thrower for their dog. Yeah. And some of the early throwers actually have a little cup like that, that were like leather, that you would cock the machine back and pull a lever and it would throw the glass ball up in the air. So that was the very early portions of the game. 1880 was actually the first target, the clay target made, and that was by a gentleman named George Legowski out of Cincinnati, Ohio. And it's funny that you said clay target. That target wasn't around for very long, but it was actually made of clay. Right. And even though that material is not used today and was only used for a short amount of time in the history of the target manufacturing, the name stuck. Like you say, you know, you tell somebody, roll your window down. Well, we don't roll our windows down anymore. Everybody pushes a button and the window goes down. But, you know, to this day, you'll tell people, hey, roll your window down. So,
right.
Then in 1888, actually over in England, when that target, when the clay target made it over there, it was very hard. It was hard to break. It was rough for shipping. Cogswell and Harrison was the first one to introduce more of the modern target. And it was made out of pitch and limestone. So that was the beginning of, I would say, the modern target, although there's been a lot of changes since then. And then White Flyer got into the game in 1892, so just a few years after that here in the States.
Stepping back, I guess, you know, you ship all these things now in boxes and cardboard and on pallets and all of this stuff. They were shipped differently way back then. They were stamped, I guess you would call it, differently way back then than they are now. Can you go through that kind of the process all the way up to where they were shipped?
Oh yeah. I mean, going back to the early part of it, I mean, we've got some funny stories we could get into, from the wooden barrels, wooden crates that they would, you see like in the old movies, like of them like shipping pots and they pull out the hay and the straw that were in there. Mm-hmm. That's really kind of how they were shipped, either that or in sawdust or things like that, to where the targets weren't banging into each other. And then slowly they moved over into the early portions of cardboard. In the early ones, when they moved over to cardboard, they actually were wrapped in newspaper to, again, stop the stacks from banging into each other. And if you do get, if you're fortunate to bump and find an old case sitting somewhere in a yard sale or a flea market somewhere, and we get calls from time to time, oh, I found this really old box and the targets were wrapped in newspaper. And everybody wants to know when the targets were made and what they're worth and everything else. But the easiest, if they're actually wrapped in newspaper, unwrap the newspaper, pull a stack out and look at it. Because a lot of the plants got the leftover papers from the local newspaper company. And that's what we use to wrap the paper the targets in. So if you open up that and it says, you know, May of, you know, 1932, it was probably made within a couple days of, you know, May 12th of 1932. So just, that's a pretty good estimate as to when those targets were made.
Now, did they hand wrap these in newspaper, every single one of them?
They did.
Wow.
They did. Yeah. The process is a little bit more automated today.
Yeah. So yeah,
even looking back 20 years ago compared to where we are today, you know, things have definitely changed and gotten a lot more automated.
The size difference from back then to now, is there a huge difference in size, or are they, I mean, are there just, I guess, the standard size target?
Yeah, it's still 108.
Yeah, still 108 yeah. Millimeter.
Okay, same yeah. Size. Yeah.
The profile of the target has gotten a little bit shorter. And that's with the automatic machines. Once the automatic machines came to the market, pretty much all the manufacturers looked at their profile of the target and slightly lowered the dome to be able to withstand the automation of the clay target throwers.
Back when everything was done by hand, they were painted by hand, I'm sure. What else was done by hand?
It's amazing how little automation was in the early target plants. Really everything was done by hand. The targets were painted by hand. They would come down the line. Somebody would pick it up. put it on a spindle, and they would get the spindle turning, and then they would take a paintbrush and dip in the paint and stick it up on the target, and then paint it. So some of the early targets were painted around the edge, and actually the center of them were left black. It's because they would just hold the brush to the edge of the target, and then what they would call a dome target, or we would call a dome target today, you actually had the middle target painted. So they didn't have like two different brushes. They had one brush, and it either painted the outside of the target or more the middle inside of the target. Then they took it off the spindle, put it back on the line, and it went down, and someone was there to stack up the targets, wrap them in newspaper and put them in a box, and then tape up the box, and then put it on a pallet and ready to move it out into the warehouse. So it's
now the designs on top of the targets. I'm sure they had those back then too, right?
They did. You have to have something on top of the target to stabilize it, whether it's lines or dimples. You know, we looked at a number of different things whenever White Flyer was purchased there, right there in 1979, and our engineers came up with the dimple design, and we still use that. Still use that today. We still use that dimple design in our AA and our Pheasant targets for sporting glaze. Now, before that, the earlier White Flyer targets, they just had a number of different lines on top.
How did they make those lines? Well, they use a
that's all in the mold itself.
Okay.
So when the material goes into the mold and is pressed, then that whatever's in that mold is how it comes out.
The colors in these targets, I'm sure they have changed over the years. How has that evolved?
It changed a lot. You know, when the early targets, they were, some of them weren't painted at all. And I'm not really sure why they decided it was a good color. But a lot of the manufacturers used white, which I couldn't imagine trying to shoot. We use them at nighttime now, but I couldn't imagine trying to shoot them, in a major tournament through the daytime. But they did have a white top and a white dome. And then that was through the like 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And then you see a transition over to the mustard yellow, which was popular for a number of years, which I'm sure was better than the white. And then really we get into the 60s and 70s between the different manufacturers, and that's when orange was really introduced. Some of the earlier ones were just a flat orange, and then we get into the fluorescence, and you know, something we work on today is always, you know, trying to get that brightest, you know, orange with the fluorescence in there. And of course, now we've introduced, you see the green and the pink, and but orange is still by far the most popular target when you go to a tournament, regardless of what it is. So,
Castellani shooting vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vests on the market. Castellani vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier of Castellani vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order.
I don't know that I've ever shot a white target that I can remember. I don't
see them very often.
Yeah.
They were used a lot at night with the old handset machines.
Okay.
Especially in Trap and Skeet, when the lighting isn't anything like what we have today with the lighted fields for shoot offs and things like that. So they would holler down to the trapper inside there and say, you know, hey, switch over from orange to white, right there at dark, and especially in the shoot offs. And then of course the trapper beating the target on there one at a time, they would just go from the orange boxes to the white boxes. But once we got into the automatic machines, where the carousels were filled up with, you know, 200, 300, 400 targets, emptying those out, and then we got the better lights, you know, really the shoot offs just stayed with the orange targets. So white has dropped off in popularity, but we still have a number of clubs that, especially in the wintertime, whenever they're shooting pretty much all of, you know, by the time they get out there in the leagues and it's already 5-6 o'clock and it's dark, they do go ahead and throw the white targets through their winter leagues. So
now what are they made of now?
Well, we sell two different targets. We sell our pitch target, as well as our blackout target. Both of the targets, the majority of the targets made of pulverized limestone. Okay. On the pitch target, still to this day, you know, it's pitch and pulverized limestone. On the blackout target, the main binder is sulfur that would be with the limestone.
But what is the difference in a standard target and a blackout target?
The blackout target is our non-toxic target. It is basically the next generation of what previously was called the biodegradable target. Okay. You know, a lot of people are familiar with the previous biodegradable. When we updated that target and made it a black composition, we rebranded it into the blackout target so that when you shoot it, it looks very similar to shooting a pitch target. With the bio target, it was a white base composition, and it would, when you would hit it with a couple pellets and not break it, you would see a big white puff. You don't see that any longer with the blackout target. And also, when the targets sit out in the field after they've been shot at, whether they're broke or whole, and the paint starts to wear off of them, the black composition is just a lot more appealing to the eye at a range.
I've shot several. Actually, I always call it smoking them when I hit them or knock dust off of them. You'll see those sitting. I've been to some gun clubs with some old targets, and you see those white targets sitting out there. The consistency. Let's talk about the consistency in these targets, because I would assume that they have to be very consistent in size, being made from a manufacturing standpoint, be very consistent in size, weight, and what I and why I would assume that is because the flight could change from a heavier target to a lighter target. The machines may not throw them. How does this process work to know that they're all pretty much exact?
We have numerous different quality checks throughout our whole manufacturing process, from coming right when the target's made until after it's painted, throughout the drying process, looking at the weights. Obviously, weights can make a difference in your targets, and especially when, for say, in skeet, you're throwing through a hoop to a stake, or in sporting clays, you're throwing through the woods. The flight path has to be very, very consistent. One, you either have breakage, if you're talking about sporting clays and you're trying to set targets in the woods, but also for the shooter's sake, for all disciplines, having a good, consistent target allows competition to be fair across the board. And we strive every day for that. Another thing that the trap manufacturers, the majority of them love White Flyer because of the consistency. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a consistent target, it doesn't matter what kind of trap you have, you're going to run into issues. So having that consistency from weights to roundness, and also to the paint. Paint is also another very important thing to have a consistent paint job.
I would not have thought that. They have to be what go into that a little bit. What do you mean by consistent paint job?
Mainly visually, consistent paint jobs.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. Yeah. So if I'm saying this correct, the manufacturer of Winchester Ammunition owned White Flyer. Is that right?
They did.
Okay.
Yep. They own White Flyer all the way up through, I don't have the exact information when Olin took over White Flyer. Olin Winchester took over, but our company, our Ragent Chemical that owns us, they took over in 1979.
Ragent Chemical? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Now, what are they?
Ragent Chemical.
What do they do?
They are a chemical division, and they actually worked. Olin actually has a chemical division as well. So that was our previous owner who owned the family business. Mm-hmm. He had relationships, and that was, they had mentioned that they were thinking about selling White Flyer at the time, and he had an interest in it. So
now where are White Flyer plants at around the country?
Our first two plants, we moved the facility from East Alton, where Winchester is still based. Mm-hmm. We moved that plant over to Webb City, Missouri, and they had another facility in New Jersey. I was a company there making targets for them on the East Coast, and we moved that plant to Cole Township, Pennsylvania. So those were our first two plants. Then in 1981, mm-hmm. I believe, we purchased the Eclipse Target plant, which was located in California, and we still have that plant. Then in 2006, we opened Knox, Indiana. And earlier this year, we opened our Dalton, Georgia facility. So we now have five plants across the U.S.
The targets shot at Nationals this year. How many were shot this year at Nationals? Do you know the number there?
It was just over 1.5, including practice.
1.5 million?
Yes, sir.
Wow. I didn't think it would be that much. Wow.
Yep.
That's amazing. I went to a tournament not that long ago. It was after Nationals, and they had some 70s. And I thought about it, you know, when I was looking at these 70s going through the sky, and I thought to myself, and I'm sure a lot of people have, who thought of making a 70? And then I thought, well, who thought of making any of them? So whose idea is it for these targets to be made, like a 70 millimeter or a 90 or a standard or black ring or whatever it is? Who comes up with this idea?
I think when it comes to the color schemes, you've got the shooter that is providing the industry with feedback. So then the industry runs with it from there to try to make things more visually appealing to all sorts of people's eyes. And obviously there's a lot of older people that shoot the clay target games. So making sure that the targets are can be seen is very, very important. Then you also have just the fun factor of having different colors out there as right. well, whether it's pink for a breast cancer fundraiser. Some of that, the pink targets have become popular at clubs on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And different times of the year, we have some clubs that will utilize maybe an all orange target when there's a lot of foliage on the trees, but then they'll switch to a orange dome during the wintertime so that there's more definition to the target without the leaves on the trees. So from the color side, you know, we're listening to the customers, we're listening to the ranges to make sure that we're producing what they want. When it comes to sizes, Josh, chime in at any point in time here, but, you've got the trap manufacturers that are always looking at a new way to sell traps. So that could be one. And then also the clay target manufacturers over the years have done the same thing, you know, to draw interest, to sell another product. The 70 target actually had been made years and years ago and never gained any traction. But it wasn't for the sporting clays world, it was for the skeet world. And then it's crazy how, you know, probably 30 years later it came back around into the sporting clays market and it's here to stay.
Does the trap manufacturer make the trap before the target's made, or does the target get made before the trap's made?
We all work together.
So, hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. So, I mean, usually, you know, they if they have an idea, they're going to come to us and say, hey, we're thinking about this. Yeah. Is it something we can do or can't do? And then we start working together. And I remember the first 70s that we produced, we were with Hayward with Promatic standing in the parking lot at the Webb City plant. And we were sitting there and had them cranked up and we're seeing how fast we could throw them on the machine. And we, you know, that was the first time that we threw ours here in the States. So
when we're talking about coming up with new targets, is there like a time frame? All right, we're going to come out with something different. You do it like every 5 years, just whenever. I mean, is there something that you look at before you come out with a new target?
I would say that, you know, our research and development department is constantly working on new things,
yeah.
Whether it's a different size target, a different flying targets, you know, like a Bat 2, something that's going to just fly completely different than a standard target, or if it's a different composition. So it's, these days, it's when it makes sense to pull the trigger on it. Mm-hmm. But we also have to, you know, have the trap manufacturers on board too, if it's going to require a different trap. Obviously, the Rabu has really taken off for them, but it's still utilizing, you know, our same rabbit target. However, as the trap manufacturers start to use our targets beyond what they were intended for, we have to do a lot of testing with that and make sure that we're making the best target for what they are trying to do. you're starting to see standard targets being thrown upside down out of automatic traps. Obviously, that's not what it was intended for. We used to do it with hand traps back in the day, you know, off an old Lincoln handset or something like that. We did that all the time. But feeding through a machine and then throwing it 60 miles an hour on its top, you know, wasn't the intention of it. So we're constantly checking and making sure that we're making the best possible target for the today's use, not last year or, you know, 20 years ago when maybe the product was first introduced.
A rabbit target, which is one I hate. Okay. What do you do to make those targets so much harder? I mean, you could take those and drop them and they never break. You know, you can take a bat and drop it and it shatters everywhere. What is the difference in the makeup of a rabbit target?
The strength is in the edge of the target. I mean, because that target was designed to duplicate a rabbit running on the ground. So if you look at the rim of that target, that's where a lot of the weight is, and that's where the strength is whenever it comes together. So once you can get that, you know, hit it with a pellet, or as we've all had it out there, you know, have it hit a rock or another piece of target and get that chip in it, the target will come apart pretty easily once you get that crack in that outer rim. But it's, you know, it's getting, as we all know, getting those pellets in that right spot to get that target to come apart.
What is the fastest a white flyer target's ever been thrown? I guess a standard. Let's just talk about standard.
Robert, is it like 67, 68?
Yeah, you'll start to get breakage on a pheasant probably right around that 70 mark. You might be able to push it a little bit more than that.
Wow.
We test them at 60 miles an hour.
That's crazy. So
that's our test speed that we test the pheasant target at. Is 60 miles an hour, but they definitely can exceed that.
Do you test out of all kind of different traps, or just, I mean, is it all, you have all the traps there, you just test them all out of all of them to make sure they all work?
We
right?
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. All major manufacturers. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I can tell you that the 70 millimeter will come out in the mid 90s.
Speed. I think they've thrown a few of them for me before.
it'll come right out there at about our Pro 70 will come out at about 94, 93 miles an hour on max spring.
That is crazy. If Rick Hemingway is listening to this, I want him to throw one of those at a tournament.
careful what you wish for.
Yeah, we'll see if he does it. I know he's going to listen to it, so.
Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" Think about that statement for a minute. He's right, and you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five stamp, and sporting clays, designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the Claybot by Rainier Products. Visit www.backwoodsquailclub.com or give him a call at 843-546-1466.
Josh, give me some good stories from back in the day that you've heard or maybe experienced.
Probably one of the best ones, and I'm, this one always, it always blows everybody away when we heard it, but, and it didn't happen to me. This is actually a story that my boss told me, that he was answering the phone and the guy was talking to him and he's saying, "Hey, we need to order more of these targets that we just shot up, because we just bought a property and we were out there in the barn and the targets were there and we were throwing up them and shooting them." He's describing the targets and the boss is like, "No, we don't make those targets." And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "It says, you know, it says down the side of it." And he's like, "No, you know, we don't make those targets." And he goes, "Well, you know, you're a target manufacturer." He goes, "Yeah, we are." He goes, "But we never made those goods." He goes, "Describe it again." He goes, "Well, it was an old wooden barrel." And my boss gets really nervous at that point in time. And he goes, "Continue." And he goes, "It was filled with sawdust. And we started digging into it. We found these glass balls." And he goes, "Please tell me you didn't throw those up and shoot them." He goes, "Well, yeah." He goes, "We had two of them there." And he goes, "You know, those glass balls are probably anywhere between $300 to $500 a piece." He said it was complete dead silence on the other end of the line. And then the guy like hung up and was gone. I'm sure he was out there in the field looking for any ones that they didn't throw up and break. out there in the grass field, but he said they had two barrels. And I mean, he was sitting on a small jackpot. Probably there were, you know, 75 to 100 glass balls in each one of those barrels, and they threw them up and shot them. So, yeah.
So those things will bring that much money now?
Yeah, some of the old ones there, you can actually go all the way up to, I believe, around $2,000 for some of the ones that were made over in Europe. Certain manufacturers, certain molds, certain colors, depending on how long the molds were around, how many were made. Yeah, there's the lower end is 200 to 400, but the upper end, yeah, you can get close to $2,000 a piece.
Wow. I would not have expected that. Now the name White Flyer, it comes from something. What, tell me about the name.
It did. It actually came from pigeon shooting. So, you know, in the early days when it was, you know, the recreational shooters, before we had the sporting clays and skeet and trap, you know, that it was either glass balls or pigeon shooting. Those were the two big ones. And White Flyer came from a nickname from pigeon shooting. If you drew a white pigeon against a white cloudy sky or a white sky, and you killed it, you walked back from your shot and the guys would say, "Nice shot on that white flyer." Same way with Remington and the Blue Rocks. If you had that light blue grayish pigeon and he flew up against that bluish gray sky, they would say, "Hey, nice shot on that Blue Rock." So Remington took Blue Rock, White Flyer took White Flyer, and those were the two prestigious kills in the pigeon ring.
Guys, thanks for coming on. I've really learned a lot. I think it's interesting to talk about stuff like this, and I'm glad to have both of you on and getting your side of this business.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for having us, Justin.
Yeah, man. And I guess I'll look forward to seeing you next time. Robert and Josh, where do y'all go? Y'all go to these big shoots, or do you have somebody else doing that for you?
No, we do. My first event will probably be the Caribbean Cup. Okay. And then the Jack Lynx the week after that in February.
My first big one will probably be the Gator.
There you go.
Down there in Georgia this year.
That's right. All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming on, and I guess we'll see you then.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Justin.
See you.